Blog Talk Radio.
We're proud. If you're listening to the Ron and Don Show, my name is Don Allen. Over in Studio A and Studio B is Mr. Ronald A. Edwards. Mr. Edwards, it's a beautiful evening. What do you think?
It is a beautiful evening here in the Twin Cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul, almost at the headwaters of the Mississippi River. Not to be confused with the state of Mississippi, but we have our own Mississippi image beyond the great spillway, if you will, or the river. A lot of things going on down. Everybody's keeping their head and ducking here in the Twin Cities, particularly in Minneapolis. A lot of gunplay. We are the new version of the OK Corral, if you will. I understand you've posted on your websites. We posted from our positions on the West Coast a 10-shot over the weekend here, over the so-called the 4th of July weekend, 10 individuals shot. Eight of them alone on Friday evening here in our city. There are meetings that are being called. It's difficult to say what they will address because they both were called before the carnage this past weekend. One will be on Monday with the sheriff of Hennepin County, the Honorable Richard Stanek. The second will be on Wednesday, Mr. Allen, at the Church of the Reverend Jerry McAfee, past president of the NAACP.
Well, these are by invitation,
and so there apparently some heavy dialogue that's going to be going on. Go ahead, my brother.
Well, I was just going to see if I could get this straight because, you know, I've been watching the news and reading a lot of websites. Didn't say 10 people shot in the last week or so here? In Minneapolis, Twin Cities?
10 people shot, Don, in a basically about a 12-hour period. 8 were shot within an hour and 15 minutes approximately in an area at about 10 blocks. And so, yes, we've had 10 individuals shot this past 4th of July, which proportionally would put us right up there by population, I mean. Put us right up there with a city like Chicago. But, yeah, 10 is the count. They held a couple back from you until this morning's edition of the major newspaper, the Minneapolis Star Tribune, largest paper in the state of Minnesota. They shoot them up time.
Oh, wow. You know, I had called the Minneapolis Urban League and the NAACP, Minneapolis NAACP, to try to get a statement or something, Mr. Edwards, and I got complete this right here, silence.
Like a warm summer's night. Okay,
yeah,
as the cricket communicated. Mm-hmm. I can believe it. I know that last night the NAACP of Minneapolis met for their annual monthly meeting, and there wasn't anything on the agenda about the issue of public safety and the shooting, including one death. I apologize to our listening audience. Of the 10 that were shot, a young 17-year-old, they're saying, succumbed to his wounds, shot to the head just in the last 24 hours. I apologize. I should have been a little bit more concise. So we had 10 shot, one fatal. Couple are still in serious condition, and it appears now we're trying to get it handled. But the NAACP meeting last night did not discuss what their interests are. But I'll tell you what they did do. Announced that they are going to take on the Police Federation of Minneapolis And it's the new leader, Lieutenant Robert Crowe, and in fact, they said they're going to eat him alive. Isn't that amazing?
It's amazing. I wonder which one of them could possibly do that. You know, I mean,
you're absolutely correct. I understand that it came from the president. The professor, Levitt Pounds, indicated that, in fact, something has been set up by the American Civil Liberties Union that is supposed to be like a Q&A. And Lieutenant Crow, president of the Minneapolis Police Federation, indicated that he would appear and he would answer all questions. And out of that came a decision to position individuals to confront him, whatever that means.
Wow, interesting. Let's hope they have the facts, because it seems like they're pretty much out of touch with what's happening in the community. And these meetings, you know, I did not get it like, we talked with Mr. Nelson earlier in our production meeting, Mr. Edwards, but I, like him, did not get a notification and to my email address. And I don't know
correct.
What that's about. And I've been a member in good standing now for going on 3 years. And, I mean, there's no reason why I shouldn't have got a notification unless, you know, they're just being strategic about who they want in the room. Because eventually I will show up. I will ask some hard questions. And hopefully, you know, they will attempt to answer it. So,
yeah. Well,
I don't think they're not focused. Mr. Edwards, we have tons of different things going on in this town, and including the, you know, the situation with MnDOT with over $300 million and only 32,000 to one three African American contractors combined. We have the shootings you just mentioned. We have the Minnesota Department of Administration. That has not been audited or have been out of compliance for an estimated over 16 years. You have the city of St. Paul out of compliance based on their hiring numbers for the people in their administration, city of Minneapolis, same thing. And you have tons and tons of construction crews, not even from Minnesota, out here in downtown Minneapolis along Snelling Avenue in St. Paul. All the major freeways doing some kind of work, and they're good faith effort. You know, I would trust Bill Cosby's pills than MnDOT's good faith effort. And so with that said, there's a huge issue that I think these folks are pretty much ignoring, because one, they don't know how to deal with it, and two, you know, they're not in it for correcting anything. They're trying to get their face on the camera, their name in the newspaper, and that kind of thing. So with that said, you know, the community, especially the African-American community here in the state of Minnesota, is pretty much screwed by the leadership of these individuals, which, you know, haven't even ran a shoeshine shop. In some cases, have never litigated a successful case in their life.
Oh, now that is kind of mean-spirited from the right,
mm-hmm.
but, you know, it the phone lines, by the way, are open because I'm interested in knowing what kind of civil rights cases that they have litigated, if you will. Here's the piece, though, that is interesting. The Minneapolis NAACP, according to their leadership last night, are going to recruit, and it's also in a copy of their minutes of their legal redress committee, which is a formally structured committee within the Constitution and bylaws of the NAACP. They are going to have groups of individuals, and they are going to take and accept each and every complaint against the law enforcement entities, primarily the Minneapolis Police Department, though they tend to not remember that there are other jurisdictions of law enforcement, both state and federal, county.
Mm-hmm.
But they are going to provide, I assume, pro bono, legal, support, if you will, and it also said in the minutes of their legal redress committee that they are going to fellowship, if you will, connect with, if you will, associate and affiliate with major white law firms. We don't have any major black law firms here in Minnesota, and that those law firms will take these matters up. Now, I have to assume that these law firms have significant pro bono trust, if you will. When I say trust, I'm talking about pro bono trust funds. where a law firm can reach into the pro bono fund, if you will, and take up a case. And if it runs $65,000, $70,000, or $5,000, that the law firm will cover that on behalf of the citizen, though you don't necessarily have to be indigent, if you will, Mr. Allen. But that is also what's in the minutes. So they're going to go down with each and every individual, starting the date, maybe one of their board members can call in. They normally listen to us and indicate when this will commence, because I know there are a lot of people out here that are looking for that kind of pro bono assistance, if you will. So that is a piece of what they are talking about, and what they say they intend to do. Also, they will be creating a youth, NAACP youth board, and will begin a full flow of activities, particularly in North Minneapolis. So that means that we will see young NAACP youth members on the streets of the city after dark, working with those quote-unquote African-American youth and others, I assume, who may be, you know, straying and going in a wayward way. So I assume they'll be working closely with organizations such as Michelle Gross, who we've had on for the last couple times in the last couple months, and her organization, which has been doing this for 16 or 17 years, okay? So this is just kind of an update from the Don and Ron show, that that this is what is being discussed, if you will, and committed to. I must emphasize that. They are committing to providing, and this is an important word within the Latin language, if you will, and that is pro bono, and for those that are indigent, if you will. So things are moving. Maybe they could assist immediately some of the 9 surviving individuals who were gunned down in the streets of our beloved city on the evening, early morning of the 4th of July. Wouldn't you think that'd be a good idea, Mr. Allen? Don must be getting a text message in. Somebody's probably texting him. But anyways, this is what is at play as we speak, and so we can look forward to all this. Back with us, Don? Good.
Okay. Yeah, Mr. Evers, I'd just like to say I would love to see them deal with some of the people that have, incurred these assaults, because they're a different kind of people. They're not the people that the leaders of the NAACP and other organizations ran by African-Americans here in this town are used to dealing with. The bourgeoisie thinks some of those people are below them. And it would be really interesting to see, this go into effect or it actually work. Now, one thing, too, Mr. Edwards, at the NAACP meeting, because I had a couple people call me horrified last night saying that, they're going to go and investigate the Minnesota Department of Health and Child Protection Services, which falls under both those agencies, for the county and the state and both cities. They're going to investigate the new hiring of 100 child protection workers. I'm going, okay, that doesn't seem really like a problem. Maybe they should hire more child protection workers, since from what I've heard from 2 child protection workers that I know personally is that their workload is huge, and sometimes they have to make a split decision of taking a child out of a home or leaving a child in, and most of the time these are black families. So if these folks really want to investigate something, they should investigate how many African-American child protection workers are being hired to deal with the culturally specific problem.
Don, let me just say this from the left. I don't have any problem. I think you're being just a tad facetious, because I know if it's found that disproportionately there are no African-Americans, or there's not a percentage that is consistent or commensurate with the presence of African-Americans in the system, I just know that with the approval of the National Board of the NAACP, I know they will file a class action lawsuit against Hennepin County. So I just have that kind of belief, right?
Ah, Yeah, that'd be interesting to see what happens there. Yeah,
yeah,
that'd
be nice. I mean, this is an organization whose history is litigation. I mean, my God, what greater presence legally can you have than Brown versus Topeka?
Yes. Yeah.
I mean, come on. I mean, or as they like to Brown versus the Board of Education. I mean, this is an organization steeped in judiciary actions and advocacy. You know, so. And if, you know, we got anybody out there, give them the phone number, call in, enlighten us, if you will. Let us know some of the other issues that they will be taking on. I repeat again that they are going to confront the president of the Minneapolis Police Federation, confront that individual and his group about, I guess, issues dealing with public safety, right?
Well, I hope they don't get caught up, you know, and slip, get caught sleeping, but yeah, it'll be pretty interesting. Mr. Edwards, we have a 111 call, I think, that we should address here real quick online.
Let's get him in. Let's get him phone lines open.
The caller, you're live on the air. Do you have a comment or suggestion?
Yes.
Okay, go ahead. You're live. Caller?
This sounds like Ahmed, the person that was with us a couple weeks ago. Speak up, sir. You're breaking up. Go ahead. What's your question? What do you want to say?
What's your question, sir?
So basically, I read one of your articles online, which...
You must be talking about you, Mr. Allen. Go ahead.
Mr. Yeah. Allen.
Yes, sir.
Yes, recently you said that on online on your article that there's some issues with... Africans versus African Americans, and I want you to talk a little more about. You think there's like a? It seems that you have some kind of envy against Africans, so I want you to.
And actually, let me correct you, sir. That was not an article on my news network. That was a Facebook post, because one of my good friends, his first name is Levon. He's a Somalian brother, and we've been friends for about 8 years now. We had this in-depth conversation one night because he felt that he was being mistreated by some African-American or black American males. And I said, you know what? I was downtown Minneapolis a couple times in the last, well, more than a couple times, but within my history, suit and tie down. And I would go to 7th and Hennepin, just before Hennepin there from the Marriott. And I was just going over from the downtown city center to the J.D. Hoyts. And I went through Somali cab drivers, before I could get a ride that short. One guy even went as far as going in his pocket and giving me a dollar, told me he catched a bus, you know, which later on I found out. But my post on Facebook, not an article on my news network, was to inquire feedback for a case study to see what people thought, how they felt, and I am by no means, I am happy to be a black American, a conservative black American, and I really have no problem with anybody from anywhere unless they are involved in the criminal activity or criminal element here in Twin Cities. Does that answer your question, sir?
Oh, no, sir.
Okay, go ahead.
You did not answer my question. In some parts you answered my question. But my real question is, do you think there's a tension between Africans and African-Americans in the Twin Cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul in terms of, because it seems that we're in the same economic system and we get competing for the same jobs, same opportunities. And do you think that there's some kind of tension? I know that historically, I graduated from the Minneapolis public school system and... Mm-hmm. There's been historically some misunderstanding. So I want analysis on...
Okay, let me give you that. I think there is tension. I think there is jealousy. I think there is envy. I think there has been a playing field created simply between the cultures because, A, the Somalian brothers and sisters come here and they open businesses. They have their own mall. They're economically doing better than American-born black Minnesotans or Minnesota-born or, you know, American blacks. And when you see that, I grew up at a time here in the Twin Cities where
I could walk to 38th Street and 4th and go to Mr. Rubin's corner store, who owned a grocery store, African American male. I can go across the street and get my hair cut at Mr. Crown's barbershop on 4th Avenue and 38th Street. I can go next door, and Mr. Crown had a record store. Then I could go up to Chicago and 38th Street, and there were several black American-owned businesses. In that neighborhood in Minneapolis and neighborhoods throughout the city, we don't see that. We have systematically somehow been replaced where black Americans, even Minnesota-born, do not have the clout or the economic ability to even open a store, keep a store open, and we are not given credit like the Somali community is given credit. And there's two, and I'm just analyzing this. This is just my opinion. This is, and it might be a generalization, but I'm just going to give it to you straight. I think there's some challenges going on with the community that the Somali community, that Somalis don't have the same history or culture that black Americans have with the white community, the white infrastructure, the white male patriarchal system here, okay? But if you look at the data, I wrote an in-depth analysis because Hennepin County would not give this Somali sister who has an office in Sabathany. I won't mention her name because she's not part of the conversation, but the example is pertinent to this, relevant to this conversation. She was concerned because she sat down with me 3 days in a row. We spent 4 hours each day together, and we were looking at the trend of infant mortality, breast cancer, cervix cancer, and different types of illnesses that are happening within the Somali community just for on the women's side, that the numbers were catching up to the American-born women here in just Minnesota. And some of these women that we looked at the study had been in Minnesota less than 10 years, which means, A, there's a problem in communication from people that administer health services. B, there's a language barrier. C, there's structural violence against anybody black in Minnesota. And those three combined are the reasons that the infant mortality rate is the same as a woman born in Minnesota in 1961 and had three kids, or when one of them might have passed away at birth or right after birth. It's the same for breast cancer. It's the same for cervix cancer and a couple of other things. I don't have exact numbers in front of you, but the Somali sister said, then we have to look at this structural violence piece. And structural violence, if anybody wants to Google it, you can Google Dr. Paul Farmer, who created the term, which means there is a purpose-focused racism, a deprivation of services, anything strategically and cosmetically they can do to circumvent the health, the economic well-being, for housing, jobs, anything to a certain group of people because of what they look like, who they are, and where they come from. And so with that said, all these health disparities that this lady and I were looking at led me to write an analysis that addressed a feasibility study being done by Hennepin County for them to put money not in the hands of the white women who run the Minnesota Department of Health that have run out of ideas, but get in a room and start crying when they see, you know, I was in, just for example, I was in a meeting about diabetes, and the one white lady just started, oh, this is so special. You know, all these people are around, and they're talking, and we're having this conversation in the community. That conversation was 0.0001% of the community that actually needed help. You know, and so with that said, the Minnesota Department of Health and different.
Yes,
go ahead.
I understand that with all due respect. I respect your opinion and your analysis, but I want the historian to jump in, and I want his opinion and his analysis. So he,
Mr. Edwards.
Mr. Edwards, yeah. our historian. So,
and what aspect of the history would you like me to comment on?
Anything you like, sir.
Anything that I would like. Well, you and Mr. Allen have really been having the conversation. You raised questions to Mr. Allen about his intent. And maybe his bias as it pertains, and his opinion of if there are tensions between African Americans and those who are born outside of the United States or have immigrated to the United States. What Mr. Allen has said, he talks in terms of a personal experience with a Somali professional, a woman who had offices at Sabathany, a community center in South Minneapolis. He talked about the diagnosis, the examination of certain empirical data, and et cetera. Okay, and so I don't hear anybody disputing that, if you will. Of course, someone may call after you go off of the air. To the fact of the historian, there has always been problems in this country since its inception, long before it became a republic, with groups that are newly migrating, quote-unquote. And, of course, it actually started with the indigenous people of this continent, and that is those that we refer to as Native Americans, if you will. They are, in fact, the indigenous people. They certainly had questions about those that came here, you know, 700 years ago and et cetera. And so the historical piece is, I don't know that there is enough material facts that could indicate and pinpoint just what the real relationship has been and currently is and what it will be in the future between those who are newly arrived, the sons and daughters of the African, as opposed to those that have been here for over 460-some years, who also are the sons and daughters of the African. And so we will have to ask the great scholars, those that are in the institutions of this country, who are trained, if you will, and encouraged to be proficient in the examination of information and facts. And my sense is we're probably, you know, 8 to 9 to 10 years away from the kind of material reflection that can make us all, you know, talk intelligently with regards to what's happened. Now, bottom line in conclusion, there are feelings amongst many in the African-American community that the history of the African-American born in this country is not respected and is not given the proper respect to the extent of what our history has been. And only at the time and the occasion that a person steps up and questions our legacy, when I say ours, I'm talking about those of us who our roots go back 450, 460 years on this continent. And so when we get to that point, then I guess we can have the kind of conversation. In fact, sir, what I would imagine will start happening, we will start having symposiums and et cetera, and people will begin to talk in terms of the narrative and if and how we are, quote-unquote, getting along. But then when we do that, we also need to bring in the indigenous people of this continent. We need to bring in Asians, if you will. We need to bring in people from the Americas, as we refer to it. That would be South America, Central America, Mexico, and et cetera. So I look forward, hopefully in my lifetime as a historian, that we will have a fully engaged conversation and discussion about, bottom line, how we're all getting along. Okay?
Makes sense. And I brought this up because this week there was an article on the Minneapolis Star Tribune which discussed the economic opportunities that the Somali immigrants have in Minnesota. And also we know the disparities that existed. So I think it's good to be informed. And as a historian, you know the history of not only in Minnesota but the whole nation. So
Absolutely, I do, sir. Thank you. Appreciate you calling. We look forward to hearing from you again.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Yep. All right.
And I put you back. Yeah. I put you back in the queue because I think he likes to listen through his cell phone. So
yeah,
you are
yeah.
in the queue,
no,
sir.
No.
Thank you.
No problem. Give the phone number out again, Mr. Allen. There may be some others that wish to kind of follow up. Maybe have inquiries of yourself or myself or just a general reflection.
Sure. That number is 347-426-3904. Again, that number is 347-426-3904. You're listening to the Ron and Don Show on Blog Talk Radio. Oh, Mr. Edwards. Oh, I was just looking around here at some national stuff, and I am shocked, Mr. Edwards, that
a 12-year-old murder suspect was arrested here in the Twin Cities.
Yes, he was in the town town towers there, South Minneapolis. 12 years old. My God, how tragic! Involved,
yeah.
According to Omaha authorities, involved on the I think
it's
the date was 29th of June. Engaged along with two other individuals, 115, 117, who were involved in a drug transaction and attempted to stick up the individuals that two adult African-Americans who brought the drugs to a park. I think it was Miller Park there in Omaha.
Mm-hmm.
The three juveniles opened fire, killing one, wounding the other. Some way or another, this 12-year-old got up here to Minnesota, was in a building, as we said, an apartment building there on the south side, when this morning United States Marshals and Minneapolis police officers swooped in, took him into custody. There will probably be a quick extradition hearing, and he will certainly be sent back to Nebraska. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, his dad is serving a life sentence in prison here for 2010 murder.
Yes.
According to the smoking gun.
Very tragic, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's just real tragic. Yeah, and we hate to see that. But the articles, you know, I'm looking around the web, I'm seeing a lot of articles, you know, federal agents arrest baby-faced boy, 12. Well, of course, come on, he's 12 years old. That should never happen. And another thing in national news, just real quick here, Mr. Edwards, it's kind of funny, but, you know, R. Kelly had his a lot of dealings with women, allegedly women underage in his musical and life career or whatever. And there's an article that is called lovethatnews.com, and R. Kelly's statement was Bill Cosby is a pervert that belongs in jail, which was having huge lashbacks against R. Kelly, because, you know, it's like the pot calling the kettle black if Bill Cosby allegedly did do something. So, but anyway, that's what's happening.
Well, what we're also looking at on the monitor here in Studio B, we don't want to leave out. Maybe there are some questions that some may have. The firestorm that Donald Trump has created both for the your party, Mr. Allen, the GOP.
Oh yeah.
And but at the same time, for himself personally, some of his empire financially has taken some hits. The golf tournament, which he long has sponsored in L.A., the sponsorship has been dropped. The event has been moved. We know that some of the big box stores, if you will, led by Walmart and others, just as they did with the Confederate flag, have indicated that there are items that are affiliated with the Trump empire, if you will, that would no longer be sold and et cetera. But Trump is standing by his guns. In fact,
yes,
he is saying right now on CNN that these people, you know, do not belong here. These 14 million illegal immigrants in the United States do not belong here. And he's citing, of course, the tragedy in San Francisco, where a Latino Mexican with a second grade education shot and killed a 32-year-old Caucasian woman there on Fisherman's Wharf there, a tourist attraction in San Francisco. And Trump, who had already raised questions about the fact that these immigrants from South America and the Americas, as we refer, are nothing more than rapists and murderers and et cetera, and then you have an incident like this in San Francisco, and, you know, Donald Trump as a Caucasian spokesman, you know, for the Caucasian cause, is able to paint the entire, you know, Latino, Mexican, America's group with the same brush. And now he's saying in interviews tonight that they don't belong here. In fact, you can see the system, Don, is trying to balance this thing up by talking about the Cosby situation.
They're really trying.
I don't know if it's going to work, but go ahead.
No, it's not going to work, Mr. Edwards, because you see, Donald Trump is not being cordial and diplomatic at all. He's going for the jugular at every one of his statements.
One thing I do like about Donald Trump, besides him having my first name too, well, he had it first, is his ability to manipulate the media for whatever need or cause he wants to. I just sit back and watch the artistry in them paying so much attention to him that they forget about everything else. Now, on one hand, yeah, he wasn't really tactful in what he said. On the other hand, you know, he picked out incidents, including an incident in Arizona where a crash by someone that was deported to Mexico six times in the last three years, ended up in a fatality. But he's talking about stuff that major news networks are taking off websites that they've reported on in the past 10 years as far as Mexican immigrants coming to the United States and being a part of the criminal element and some of the prisons in Mexico releasing prisoners and sending them to the U.S., which has happened, okay? Maybe not the firestorm that Trump is talking about, but, yes, it has happened. You know, my consensus has always been, Mr. Edwards, that, you know, based on the there's no such thing as a legal immigrant because the United States never paid the Mexicans the money or let them do what they want to do back after the Mexican-American War. They kind of stiffed them like they did the Native Americans, so I think, you know, they can live where they want to. But that's just, you know, my personal interest there. But I am so happy on a lighter note that I was able to purchase and gift all of the colors of the silk, beautiful Donald Trump ties that his company makes. They're high class, high quality, and Mr. Trump, if you're listening, I thank you.
Don to the right. This is R. Edwards from the left. You don't think that Donald is hanging himself with his own silk scars, do you?
No,
I mean, you kind of think he's hanging himself. I mean, let me ask you right now, you know, from the right there, over there, where you're at, do you really think that and now he's going to be on the platform based on the rules, the top 10 percentage getters, if you will. So he's going to be on the platforms when these debates start later on this year for the nomination for the Republican.
Yeah.
Now, do you think your namesake is hurting or helping the GOP?
You know, let me tell you, Mr. Edwards, I am so happy that he is scaring the piss out of them right now because his popularity ratings, you know, because you know you got some good old boys that love them some Donald Trump, okay? His popularity rating is moving almost, it's so close to Jeb Bush that's going to pass him. And people are looking for this hardcore right-wing conservative right there to the right of Ronald Reagan that just says what he wants to say. And it says
now,
what he means.
But the RNC chair, who you're familiar with, all you people on the right, he's asking Donald Trump, the Pacific statement is, I'm looking here on the screen, asking Trump to rein in immigrant remarks. Now, but should we do that, Mr. Adler? Let me kind of reverse and go a little bit maybe to the right of you. Should we ask a candidate for the highest office, the most powerful office in on the face of the earth, the presidency of the United States, should we ask the candidate or potential candidate to rein in their observations and remarks which they maintain are being made for the good of America? Should we ask them to rein that in? Isn't that kind of an infringement of the right of First Amendment?
That is an infringement totally, you know, home of the free, land of the brave, all that, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. The RNC is extinct, okay? And what Donald Trump is doing, see, they don't know how to deal with them. Everyone that they've dealt with, from McCain to Romney to whoever, you know,
Sarah Palin. Don't forget the lady.
Yeah,
now.
Sarah Palin.
Former governor of Alaska.
We're all yes people. Donald Trump does not have to bow down to that organized
because he's a billionaire.
He's like, you know, screw you. I can create my own Republican Party if I really want to, and he could. And you know what? The scary thing might be, Mr. Edwards, he might be the one. they might just say, what the hell, we can't beat him, we can't money up against him, we're going to roll with him. And that's, you know, a contest between him and Hillary. I would love to see the results. We have a caller on hold, Mr. Edwards.
All right, let's get the caller in. Let's get the caller in. And right now we're talking about Donald Trump.
Yes, caller, you're live.
How y'all doing?
Who's calling?
This is Jamar. How y'all doing this evening?
Yeah,
not
real good,
bad.
Brother. What can we do for you?
Well, I got a few things. Let me start. Let me help you out. I'm glad y'all started with this idiot Donald Trump. Don, he is making a mockery of the whole process, the primary process, and the electoral process. And if any Republican, especially Rance Priebus, doesn't come out and make a stronger argument against him and his disrespect of minorities, he is going to destroy this party within this whole election cycle, which I believe.
What do you care? Wait. What do you care if Donald Trump destroys the Republican damn party?
Mr. Allen, let the guest get his comments in now. You and I have been talking and dominating.
Mm-hmm.
Let our caller, please, let our caller get his comments in. Go ahead, caller. Please, go ahead.
Thank you.
Oh, yeah.
And to mention, if they don't say something, he is going to destroy your party. And again, you get. What another guy that joined in today? So we got a total of almost 16 candidates. Rance Priebus should be saying, "Wait a minute, hold up, this is ridiculous." Okay, you're not going to be taken serious. You got 16 candidates for people to look at. They can't take it. It's hard enough to get people to pay attention after they've done their summer activities. To now think about it, because you guys' first debate is August 6th. So you're expecting people to, again, to
no,
kind of rein themselves in. No, not you guys.
Yeah.
Not you guys. Not ours yet. So you guys, they're expecting you guys to rein in and then pay attention. I think that's acting a bit much. And then you got this guy going around on CNN or Anderson Cooper and then with the other young lady talking about Mexicans, just degrading Mexicans or Hispanic Americans. And listen to how he refers to us as the blacks. He was asked if he had a good relationship with African Americans. He said, "Yes, the blacks love me." The blacks love you?
Who do you want to be called?
Someone.
I mean, you act like he's like walking up to the door of CNN and all these things. They're coming to him. That gives
doesn't
them
matter.
They
are. You absolutely.
Okay, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No.
Yes,
I just want to say, I'm absolutely going to him. But the fact is, sometimes. Be a little bit more strategic. Quit opening your mouth at every. You don't have to answer every question. And then he seems a bit angry. And then you already are a party.
Wait a minute now. Wait a
homophobic.
Minute. Yes, are you saying that Donald Trump is an angry white man? Ooh.
He's an angry white. No, actually, in his case, it would be an angry pink man or orange man, whatever color he is. That tan and color
he is.
Angry
white.
How about just an angry billionaire?
Angry billionaire. He's an angry billionaire that likes to throw his feet around. And I'm glad he's making a mockery of the whole process because, again, when it's time for independents to look at your party, they're going to say he is the clown that's driving the clown car.
Okay, with that said, we'd like to thank you for calling. We have a few more listeners. I'll keep you in the queue, Mr. Nelson. Again, that number is 347-426-3904, number 347-426-3904. Caller, you are live on the air. Who's calling?
Larry Tucker.
Hey, Mr. Tucker, how are you, sir?
Oh, Larry Tucker out of Omaha, Nebraska. What can we do for you,
Mr.
Tucker?
Yeah, I know where Miller Park is, too.
I know you do. That's why I made mention of it. Go ahead.
You know, some of these folks are pretty new, you know. Why are you getting so enthused about a Donald Trump or any other politician? I mean, why is that important? Politicians are good politicians. He has to say what he has to say in order to get elected.
Mm-hmm.
And the better he say that, the more he's able to get elected. And you got to just take his speak, it's just political speak, and not absorb it as if it's meaningful or significant. It's inconsequential, all of them. Barack Obama included, say what they have to say to get elected, and they do what they have to do to stay elected. And their policies are in place that prevents them from working outside of that sphere. And that's mm-hmm. one of the things that I question all the time. The policies that we have in place, whether it's the NAACP, the city of Minneapolis, or many other of these organizations, it doesn't make any difference who you have downtown as a civil rights director or mayor. There's some policies in place that do not allow them to do anything but work in a small little box. The other thing is that nobody in this country has ever achieved political power without an economic base. Mm-hmm. You have to have an economic base. When Blong Yang, a Fifth Ward alderperson, said there is no legitimate businesses in North Minneapolis, and I asked him, if that is the case, what are you doing to bring about a legitimate business? Mm-hmm. And he sits there and he looks at you. Don Samuels did not believe that blacks should go in business. Okay? Mm-hmm. I had Mayor Stenvig make some statements to me that he would probably never make to another African-American person. Okay? I've had other people tell me I had a president of one of the major banks was willing to float an industrial revenue bond for me, or tax, or TIF bond. Mm-hmm. And this particular city council person says to me, as long as he was living, no black man would ever get a TIF in the city of Minneapolis. Mm-hmm. You have to understand the forces back there. And those people, those puppets they put up there, who these people who run these social organizations, they're going to try to get us to be in par with our white counterparts through a social organization with no money.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you've said that before, Mr. Tucker. I mean, it, you know,
if you're not running anything but your mouth and
yeah,
and
you know, in fact, I was in a meeting with you at the Urban League in the basement there with all that mold, and you kind of said the same thing to the African American contractors and et cetera. Do you think that they learn anything though? Do you think they're listening?
No,
they have a plan, Mr. Tucker?
No, Professor Gould says there's more differences among a group of people than there are between a group of people. You're not going to get but 5% of any group, whether they're blue, black, green, white, or polka dot, to be effective business people. 5%. Mm-hmm. And I'm not going to expect that you're going to have a large number of African-American people who really understand the business process. There was a person who worked on the light rail from Minneapolis to St. Paul. It took him 9 months to get paid. 9 months.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Okay. How can you play a game like that? And the other thing that troubles me, and I told one of our elected officials this about 2 days ago, when you got these little girls and little boys coming in the room and say, well, where is your affirmative action? Are you certified as a DBE? I said, this ain't South Africa. I don't need no green card to do business.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, they don't know anything about a business, as Don is famous. They ain't never run a shoe shine stand.
Okay,
they're gonna come in and tell you how to run a business with a checklist of things that you need to have in order to be successful in business.
Let me ask you this, Brother Tucker. Who do you think, in your estimation, during the time that you've been here in Minnesota, who do you think was the most successful African-American entrepreneur slash business person?
In what regards?
Successful. In a business venture, running a business for profit, because you've already indicated that the nonprofit is not going to get it done. So my question is, who do you feel meets the criteria that you've just reflected on in the history and your familiarity with this city? Is there anybody out there? Is there anybody out there that Dr. Childs, as an example, you know who Dr. Childs is. Was Dr. Childs a success story?
You know, I've had some dealings with Dr. Childs. I think he's an interesting person. And I think that he's got a product from this company called Honeywell, which he has tried to make it successful. And he's a bright guy. I don't know how good a business person he is. He just got a product from Honeywell that Honeywell could not manufacture themselves because it was not cost effective. 3M creates these products from time to time that's not cost effective for 3M to manufacture as a large organization, so they give them to the employees. Happens all the time. Dr. Charles, I understand.
Charles, Dr. Charles, yeah. Okay.
Charles has this disc that he grows that is could be very, very, very effective and economically significant. But as far as I understand it and my dealings with him, he's been working on this thing for years.
Okay.
I don't know how successful he is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I know there's always people who want to sunshine you, want to have this Austin Spacey. Yeah, we got one. Here he is. He really knows. And the first thing I go in the room and I say to all those prominent, a lot of people who feel as though they treat us like we're totally insignificant,
mm-hmm.
the first thing I do when I go in the room is ask them, is their company hiring? Is your
mm-hmm.
company hiring?
Mm-hmm.
I know there's a lot of black kids in our community that needs a job. Is your company hiring? And they tell me, I don't have a company.
Mm-hmm.
Then I say, well, what the dickens are you in the room doing? Well, I want to talk to you.
Mm-hmm.
I said, is your bank giving out any loans?
Yeah, right.
I have a bank.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Is the savings and loan company giving out? Is the credit union you run giving out any loans?
Right.
It's,
okay.
I have one.
Mm-hmm.
So what are you in the room talking about? So we got problems in our community. We don't have no problems. We don't have any money.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, you've been saying that.
We don't
for a
have any
time.
Money. To
yeah.
run around here and try to talk about the negative impacts and the negative effect that's going on in our community is
mm-hmm.
very simple. We're broke.
Mm-hmm. We're broke.
We're
yeah,
broke.
Right. Yeah.
You're broke.
Okay. All right.
Come on, have a free lawyer. You don't need no free lawyer. You need a lawyer you can pay to do what you want to do.
Sure. Sure.
Later.
All right.
Hold
then.
On, Lori. Why not
yeah,
have a Lori
like
you can
look like, hey, brother, we look like we may have some other callers. Be interested to see if anybody can answer the question, who is considered to be the most successful black entrepreneur as it pertains for profit business. All right then, Brother Tucker.
Okay.
All right, take
thank
care.
You, sir.
Yes, sir.
Yeah,
you know, Don, that's
yeah.
a question that you need to ask. And we need to ask, who do people – they see, there's only a couple that I can think about, and I've been here much longer than Brother Tucker or yourself or most others. And there's only about two names that come into play right now, three. I'll give it three for this reason, for a purpose now. Brother Jones of Thermo King, Archie Gibbons, okay,
mm-hmm.
and Dr. Childs.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if there's anybody else, can you think of anybody offhand? That's why I was trying to get our
well,
last caller.
Well,
kind of...
I would have to go directly to my immediate family. My uncle, Bernie Battle, first electrical contractor in
mm-hmm.
the Twin Cities, black operated. It, you know, it was with a span of over what 45, 50 years until he
mm-hmm.
retired, I guess. And who else here? Well, my dad was a contractor responsible for a lot of the houses on the, what would that be, the east and west side of 94 from Lexington into downtown St. Paul when they put 94 in. I can go by right now, and I do it all the time when we're in St. Paul, and point to the houses that my dad built that people still
okay.
live in to this day that look like houses from the suburbs in over there in the middle of St. Paul. And so other than that, you know, I mean, they hung around a lot of people, you know, I saw growing up. But, I mean, that caliber, you know, of business person is non-existent. And if they do exist, they're into some kind of social cabal crap.
Okay.
It's like the guys at the Minnesota Minority Contractors. You know, they're meeting on a Thursday afternoon at 1 o'clock. And my question to them was, okay, Thursday afternoon at 1 o'clock, and all y'all are no one has a job. You know.
You know, I used to think about that on the occasions that I myself used to go to their meetings and monitor and try to get them to stand up and raise questions about all these big contracts, for-profit contracts that were out there, even long before the Viking Stadium. But they really weren't interested, if you will. How long are we going, Mr. Allen? Because we're coming up on 9:30. What have you?
Oh yeah, we're fine. We're fine. We're
fine to 10 o'clock because we want to let our listening audience know. Because we were expecting really some calls about the violence. And where do we go from here? Because no matter what all of us say, we have to repeat again, over the weekend, 10 people were shot.
Yeah. And again, that number 347-426-3904. And the caller from St. Paul, please call back. I'm sorry for not getting to you sooner, but the minute your number pops up, I will get you on the air. And I apologize, man. Again, that number is 347-426-3904, and I hope that listeners will call in with questions, concerns, comments, et cetera. It would be really great. And next week, just for a reminder, we plan tentatively to have Kim Collins from MnDOT, the Civil Rights Director of MnDOT, live on the air with us to kind of explain what MnDOT is doing and how they are doing it and why the such low contracting within the African American, or for that matter, minority ethnic community, where American Indians, $0, Asians, $0, and how do they spread the wealth and make it happen? So that'd be next week, the 15th, 8:30 p.m., right here on Blog Talk Radio. Mr. Edwards?
I look forward to that because of the continued criticism of MnDOT over the last number of years with regards to the very minimal amount of dollars that are awarded to MBEs and even WBEs, that's Minority and Women Business Enterprises. I fight back to your uncles and father and et cetera. You talked in terms. They were the original incorporators, along with a man by the name of Stanley King, of the Reverend. Excuse me. Let me be respectful. The Reverend Stanley King, who was quite a power force here in the late 1960s and into the early 1970s, about up to probably by 1973. Then he relocated to Denver, Colorado, and passed a couple of years ago, at really kind of a young age, and so. You know, I'm just trying to get a feel on, you know, we ask the question here all the time, Mr. Allen, what the heck is the plan, man? The plan would be one that, as the caller from Omaha, Mr. Tucker, said that you got a community that doesn't have any money. But then I revert back to a column in 2010 in the Spokesman Recorder by Booker T. Hodges, Dr. Booker T. Hodges now, who is a deputy sheriff and a sergeant in the Dakota County Sheriff's Department, but he wrote a series of articles back in 2010 before he had all those degrees, letters, and et cetera, in which he pointed out in excess of $10 million that had come into the African-American community over a period of 10 years, as an example. Just $10 million just given to organizations to help us develop a economic portfolio.
Yeah, exactly. And there was we have a caller, too.
Let's hope this. Let's get him in.
Okay, caller, you're live on the air. Go ahead.
Oh well, thank you, gentlemen. I'll identify myself. I'm Mr. M. I'm a frequent caller to your program, and
yes, you are. Thank you. Welcome.
Quite a supporter. Quite a supporter of your mission and your program. But you know, I guess my comment to some of the things that you've been saying is that the leadership in the Twin Cities is basically asleep at the wheel. I mean, they continue to get positions, they continue to get dollars, they continue to get dollars and put them in their pocket and not do anything for the community. I mean, I think it's proven out there. I mean, there was a store, I can't think of the name. What was the name? Was it in there? English? Is that the name? I can't.
On Glenwood. On Glenwood, next to the Sunnyside Cafe. Is that the store you're talking about? Next to the Sunnyside Cafe. Yes, yes.
Skyline Market.
The building is owned by the owner of the Sunnyside. But go ahead, Jim, your thanks, your thoughts.
Yeah, well, I from what I understand, at least there was big fanfare in the Star and Tribune, big fanfare about opening up the store. And on the north side, they have fresh food, they have healthy foods and for the community. And, I mean, it was almost an open and shut case. The store opened up and it just shut down. I mean, I had no idea how long it was open because
open
I went over to
year.
The store.
Yeah.
I mean, I wanted to patronize it, even though I don't live in the North community. But, I mean, I still grew up in this area, and I feel that that's a part of.
Let me see. Let me make sure for the purpose of transparency that we put out, because this
sure.
was, I remember we were talking about the big three, and it was Mr. English, Mr. Ezell Jones, and an attorney by the name of Treadwell or Treadwell or something like that, former football player at the University of Minnesota.
Treadwick,
I'm sorry. Treadwick. See, these names,
like
you know,
that.
They come and go.
Yeah.
M is absolutely correct, Mr. Allen.
I remember that
store
yeah.
and the celebration and et cetera. Somebody told me a terrible rumor. They told me that those individuals bailed out owing – the owner of that property $60,000.
Well, Mr. Edwards, let me give you some firsthand information and for full disclosure about
Stay
Skyline
with it,
Market.
Stay with it.
And M, you will appreciate this. When Mr. English took control of that store, the owner of Sunnyside, a business relation I'd had for over since 2008, called me up and said, "Don, we need you to do some promotions for this on the web, do some social media stuff, et cetera." I said, "Sure, I'd be glad to do that." I ended up calling Red Chapman, who had did a story on WCCO about the first black-owned corner store opening in Minneapolis in 20 years. And there was a lot of fanfare. Star Tribune picked it up, City Pages, a lot of different organizations picked this story up. And,
I remember well.
And my job, which a regular media person would have made about $20,000 for doing for them, you know, turned it into something like about $175. Okay, I'm not mad. That's what the black community does to its own. But anyway, what had happened was Mr. English had his brother running the store, and Mr. English was never there, and the store had items that people in that community don't buy. You know, have you ever went to an SA and seen that just a massive aisle with Cheetos and, these fruit snacks, these nut snacks, and these, I almost said something else, and all these different items that are geared to a west of North Minneapolis clientele, because that's what they thought they were going to get in there, because that particular corner had 30,000 eyes going into downtown during rush hour and 30,000 going out. The reason why I know that is I was a business partner and a person that owned a property across the street from Sunnyside that was our office. And he did the research, got the research from his marketing department here in the city that supplied that information, that we were in a good spot, high volume, et cetera, people coming in, affluent from the suburbs, using Glenwood to get into downtown from Wayzata and west of the city. But anyway, the story goes that these guys just bailed out, and it created torment for the owner of Sunnyside, who owned the building, and his wife, and she just got so upset that sometimes she did not come into work. And these guys wouldn't call her back, Mr. English, and, you know, they took a hit. They took a huge hit. It almost collapsed that whole corner, you know, because the store with the immigrant folks running it was doing about $100,000 a month. Okay, and the store where Mr. English and his brother and others were running was doing less than $5,000 a month. So these were not business people in that store doing business. Now the owner of Sunnyside has moved back in one of the immigrant experienced business people, and they're back up to regular numbers right now, where they can pay the $5,000, you know, $7,000-$10,000 a month for rent,
okay,
and not hurt them, and they sell anything. So that's kind of what happened, and that all blew up and disintegrated and deconstructed in under a year.
Now, let me ask a question to you, Mr. M.
Thank you for the
point that you were making. Walk us through, because you were obviously calling attention to something that we have to take responsibility for as a community once in a while. But go ahead.
Well, you know, no, I think that these individuals that continue to, you know, I mean, clearly some of those individuals, for example, with the store we just talked about, I mean, some of those individuals have background. Some of those individuals have experience, and some of those individuals parlayed that so that they could get that money, okay?
Okay.
But what happens is they don't have the wherewithal in their heart to say, well, what we're doing is just not for us as individuals. You know, if you want to go into a business for yourself, well, do that. Open up a business for a profit and just, you know, go for it. I mean, that's what this American capitalism system is all about. But
okay. If
you're going to put something in the community and you're going to do something, basically you're giving back. Basically you're saying you're going to give us this money so that we can spread this wealth and grow something in our community. And see, and that's what's missing with the people that continue to jump up and get the money. And again, I continue to put the blame on those that bestow those funds on those people. I mean, they should do their due diligence, they should do their background, and they should hold them accountable for the funds that they get for a particular mission. I mean, that's kind of my point. It just continues to go around in this wheel, this circle, where failed initiatives, the store, we don't even really need to talk about African American Museum. I'm sure it's defunct. I think there's a building there, but I have no idea who owns it. I have no idea what's going on with it. I haven't heard nothing from the.
Oh, they lost.
Another
lost
great
the property
fanfare.
And lost the. They lost the institution, so that's why nobody really.
But again, these are people that have the expertise and wherewithal if they want to do it.
That was very much tied in as a special consultant and advisor to Ms. Gibbons, Roxanne Gibbons, who is now resides in Las Vegas, is just the newly appointed person for the NAACP to deal with the issues of housing and health. In Minnesota, gentlemen. So that will be interesting. I hope they do a little better job than they did back in 2006.
Well, another problem. I mean, if you fail, why does failure?
But anyway, that's another story.
Yeah, I know.
For another time, if you will. Gentlemen, here's where, you know, it was just a year ago, gentlemen, on this program that Mr. Allen and I were talking, and we were being criticized for even reflecting on it because we were being told it wasn't any of our business. You remember, Mr. Allen, we were reporting on the new industrial park that we were going to get?
Yes.
And, M, you were, as you are now, a frequent caller, and we kind of talked about that one night. And we kind of went over the proposals and et cetera, and we were going to get a big industrial park somewhere in North Minneapolis, and there were three gentlemen, Mr. English, if you will, Mr. Robert Jones, who now is the chancellor of the New York State Higher Education, and Mr. Taylor, who is the head of the – is that the Economic Development Agency for Minneapolis, Mr. Allen?
Yeah, CPAD, yes.
Yeah, right.
Oh, Taylor.
And
yes. Wasn't he affiliated with the University of Minnesota also?
Yes. He was the overseer for UROC when it first opened up. He was the right hand of Dr. Robert Jones back in the day. And I mean, M, you know, there was so much discussion and talk going on back in 2005, 6, 7, 8, and 9 about prosperity and et cetera that was going to be forthcoming.
Yes. There was, but I want to throw one name out. As you bring that up, Mr. Edwards, Dr. Jacchetti.
From my area, from where I attended the University of Syracuse. Dr. Cicchetti, my man, you know he still works on the examination of the Negro, but he's confined to the campus of the University of Minnesota.
Oh,
Dr.
yes,
Cicchetti.
I went to several meetings, you know, with great, again, these things happen with great fanfare.
Yes.
You know, these things come out and they foist these things on the public. You know, they blast it in the paper, they're on the news, and there's big meetings. And, you know, one of the things with the doctor, the great doctor, I think he's still affiliated with the university, if I'm not mistaken. Dr.
I just said he was. Yeah, Dr. Cicchetti works quietly in a building over there and still is doing what he did. In Rochester,
New York.
Yes, Dr. Cicchetti is in a book called Medical Apartheid. I would call attention to that book.
I got to write that one down.
A fellow at Columbia University in some experiments on African Americans, Dr. Cicchetti, my main man.
I'm just going to say what I heard and. I attended some of those meetings with Dr. Cicchetti, and I heard him speak several times. And my impression was that he was brought here to bring that same program that he was touting in Rochester to North Minneapolis. And that
You're
program,
correct, sir. You're absolutely correct.
Now, that program, now I'm not going to get into, you know, a lot of psychological. I mean, I do have a master's degree, so I am a somewhat learned person. So, I mean, I'm not just someone that just, talking about this stuff, but his modus operandi was to come in with a modality of drug treatment.
Oops.
To address the alleged behavior problems
of the little Negro children in North Minneapolis.
But it was focused in North Minneapolis. Yeah,
him and Mr. Edwards.
Definitely focused.
M and Mr. Edwards, from the file of Mr. William English, again, in 2012, was it 2011, just before the City Inc. closed, I happened to be sitting in the lobby of UROC. That's when I was doing those internet marketing classes there for the community, and I told them, and I just got done. Here pulls up a van full of youth. From 9th grade to 12th grade, about 25 of them. In walks, after all the youth, William English. And so I'm pretty cool with the receptionist, so I go, I say, hey, what the hell are all these kids here from City Inc. with Mr. English? Oh, they're taking a survey in back. They're giving them like $25 to answer some questions on violence in the community, which Mr. Edwards, as you know, led to that panel at Shiloh International Church with them yahoos. From all over the United States to do this panel on violence. You remember that they had?
Yes, I certainly remember it well. Mm-hmm.
Remember that? And yeah, I was like, wow, he actually had these kids to come up here to be analyzed for this. And that was the foundation of this WAC report that these folks put together talking about where the violence is coming from. I mean, stuff that a 10-year-old kid in North Minneapolis on the street could tell you. Okay.
And by the way, gentlemen, both him and my associate, Mr. Allen, it was an outgrowth of that the then beloved mayor of the city of Minneapolis, R.T. Ryback, took that to the National Conference of Cities. And, Em, I know you're very much familiar with what I'm talking about, and made a presentation about how to deal with the Negro problem. He presented a position paper at the conference of cities and / the Pacific workshop and et cetera was with big city mayors. And our beloved mayor, they had been dissecting us since around 2004. And it is all in the minutes, if you will, and in a report. Now, we've talked about this report. I've talked about this report on my television program 7 or 8 times over the last 6 or 7 years, and people just get real quiet. You know what I mean? Don't want to talk about it. And Sister Allen has touched on something again that had to do with experimental medicine in North Minneapolis, particularly in that period from 2006 right up until the tornado, 2011. Oops.
And this is, you know, it's kind of funny as we kind of revisit some of this, you know, actually recent history. I mean, some of these names continue to come into play. Shiloh, English, Ryback. I mean, the same things continue to, and I where there's smoke, there must be fire. I mean, that's what I've always been told.
Mm-hmm. And we were well told back in 2010 and before the tornado, again, of all this money that was coming in. In fact, at a place called, now referred to as North Point, used to be Potted City.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They were working quietly to recruit and solicit young, single African-American mothers and their offsprings and bring them in for study, research, and et cetera. And, gentlemen, I can remember discussions on that in different arenas, and we would always be confronted with, we shouldn't talk about those kinds of things. That is outside the purview of you coloreds. I mean, you know. And now we've got all of these problems with respect to drug addiction and et cetera, and no one seems to be able to have a handle on it. And like I said, we're coming down to the end of the time, but, you know, these phone lines are always open because we've got so many people. And that's why I have such appreciation of you, Em. You have no reluctance, no problem of speaking and bringing forward some of the historical information. But we just need some of the other folk out there who know everything that we're talking about.
Yeah.
To be factual. I mean, come on. You know.
Well, I would hope at some point, you know, we really can hear from some of the community members. I mean, some of the people that, you know, they go to North High School, they go to the schools over North, they're involved, their kids are involved in there. And what is lacking as far as services? It's supposed to be services, it's supposed to be social services, but I see more and more murders. I see more and more mayhem going on the north side of Minneapolis and the south side of Minneapolis, for one, and all in the core of the city, downtown Minneapolis. I don't see that these social programs, these dollars, as you've talked about this in the last, you know, this program, the amount of dollars that have been infused into this. So if dollars are supposed to help, well, they're not helping, or they're not going to the right entities to make a difference. And I guess that's my final point. I mean, money is there. Resources are there. I mean, heck, they take money out of my paycheck every week, okay? that's without fail.
Good point. I understand what
you're
saying.
Money is there. Money is there. So you got to put
all
it
right,
in my
hand. All right, Em, appreciate it, man. Continue
all right, gentlemen.
To stay with us, if you will.
I certainly will,
maybe we'll get another corner drugstore. Well, drugstore would be helpful, too. Remember, we also used to have a drugstore, gentlemen. Right there where UROC is now, when that whole mall, strip mall, God, I remember the promises that were made there as Staten's Liquor opened up and the store.
These same names. I can't take it anymore. I've got to sign off. I can't take it anymore.
All right, thank you.
All right.
Thank you.
Yes, Mr. Allen. My God, man, there's been so much promise, if you will, so many commitments made to our beleaguered community. Wow, you know. But anyways, phone line is still open, Mr. Allen. We've got what? We're down to the last 11 minutes, 10 minutes. Phone lines are open. We're just kind of analyzing maybe some of the undercurrent and the crust, if you will, of the violence that we see in our community, the sense of hopelessness and et cetera. I know we're not supposed to talk about this, Don. I know we're not supposed to imply hopelessness and et cetera, because that makes a lot of politicians and leaders angry and upset. But
and
that's kind of what's happened, though, isn't it?
Yeah, that's what's happening. And you know, Mr. Edwards, I'm getting some messages from Texas that are just absolutely hilarious. They're saying,
I bet they are.
What are you guys going to do? And to that, I'm going to tell y'all, you know, I'm going to post a picture of what you look like first on Facebook. Then I'm going to tell you that, you know, we are doing what we're supposed to be doing. We're staying in our lanes. We're doing news. We don't own or operate any social service agency, okay? Now, Ms. Edwards, you've been in the room for many years. I started going in the room about 2008, and I stopped in 2012 because it was ridiculous. Because these people had no ideas. They weren't business people, and they couldn't fathom a construct of a proposal that was more than two pages. You know? And so, I mean,
I know. You know, but one of the things that is allowed in a democracy, those folks that want to know what we're doing, just call in and ask us, have a couple specific questions and ask us what are some of the things that we have done. You know, and we'll, you know, Ron and Don will be happy to answer the question. If not, we'll be happy to refer you. In fact, sometimes I just can't wait for someone to call and say to me personally, like a man or a woman, what have you done? Oh, my God. Let me, where do you want me to start? Do you want me to start in 1959, 1960? Do you want me to start in 1970, 1980, 1990, 2000? I mean, where do you want me to start? I'll start for you. You know, you know, you said something at the top of the program, Mr. Allen, and maybe you yourself didn't even totally think about it when you raised the question about what kind of litigation have people been involved in, what kind of issues have they taken, and et cetera. And I got to tell you, man, my name is on some pretty important litigation in this state that opened doors of opportunity for African Americans. Oops. And I'm just kind of always waiting for someone to raise that question. I'm talking about litigation. I'm talking about going in, litigating. I'm talking about, I hate to say it like this, Mr. Allen, I'm talking about being appointed by the federal court to monitor, to make sure that the implementation takes place and et cetera. I'm talking in terms of being appointed by the Department of Justice to make sure that a corrective action is taken. And, you know, by the way, all of that is pro bono / volunteer. So when I hear people texting those kinds of things to you away from the maddening crowd, if you will, I just wish you would call and ask us to kind of give you the history, you know, and we will talk about the things that we have been involved in. By extension, then, Mr. Allen, that means this program, because you cannot take away the experience. I know some people would like to do that, but you cannot take away and make disappear the experience and the legacy. And I've had the pleasure to work closely with some of the great giants of modern times. When I say modern times, I'm talking about people who started dealing with the issues and problems in the 1920s and 30s, before I was born. Okay, so anyways, hey, you know, we do not back away as the Ronnie Donnie Gang.
and Mr. Edwards, you know, again, in the beginning of the show, we had talked a little about Donald Trump. There is an exclusive story in the Daily Mail, UK Daily Mail. My son was murdered by a Mexican illegal immigrant, just like Catherine Steinle. It's time for people to listen to Trump, says mother of gunned-down teenage football star, who happens to be African-American. She is stumping for what Donald Trump is talking about. She's a 17-year-old standing next to his father, a star football player. She is a Army officer. He is a sergeant. Well, she's a sergeant in serving. She was serving in Iraq when her 17-year-old son was murdered by Pedro Espinoza. Was sentenced to death in 2012. He was never supposed to be in the country. If his immigration records had been checked properly, it would have been clear that he should have been deported. And so Trump
just as
now,
the gentleman in San Francisco who had been deported five times.
Yes,
back
exactly.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Okay.
Exactly. So, yeah, he is he's doing the damn thing. So I have no problem with that. And,
you know, we've always said this, Mr. Allen, sometimes you got to be careful what you ask before.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you know. But anyways, let me just say this. I mean, we'll just, as we begin to close it out, congratulations to the soccer fans of America. The USA women's soccer team win the national, the world title, if you will, against Japan in a game that I thought was a little bit more lopsided than I expected, 5-2, which is a pretty high score for that level of international soccer, if you will. But congratulations. One of the things that I did notice that is kind of troubling, I noticed on this. There wasn't a single African-American, and I can well remember in 1999 when the United States won its first International World Federation title, there was all this enthusiasm, and I saw so many little African-American young ladies interested in soccer and et cetera, but there were never any programs created in our communities, with maybe the exception of maybe up here and there in California, maybe Atlanta. And I was really surprised this time around, this 2015 International FICA tournament, that there was not a single young African American on that team.
Not good.
Not good at all. I mean, you know, because we provide and attribute so much to this nation. But you see, as a soccer fan and as a sports historian, see, I well remember all the things that were said in 1999, and even as late as 2004, we were still hearing about these soccer programs, development. We call them development programs that were allegedly going on in the industry, and it never happened. You know, maybe it's not important anymore. Maybe we should just spend our time trying to just save our children and hope that they don't wind up in the penitentiary or dead.
Mm-hmm.
Is that the way it is?
Yeah, that's true. That's kind of the way, that's the trend things are going. I mean, we don't have any spokespersons, very little leadership, and those that were leaders are co-opted by craziness. So I don't know what's going
to happen. One other note as we wrap it up, we're down the last 3 minutes, just want to kind of remind those that are interested, yesterday in Charleston, South Carolina, a state grand jury, Charleston County grand jury, indicted our good friend, the supreme neo-Nazi, Mr. Root, on 12 counts, 9 counts of murder and 3 counts of attempted murder in Charleston, South Carolina.
Wow.
And yet I
That's
really
great.
Didn't hear much about it today. That they were spending, you know, more time on Bill Cosby.
Oops. Yes, they were. They sure were.
I understand that, you know, there's concern because there were, with the exception of one African-American, the model Miss Campbell, all the other victims were Caucasian women. So I guess that meant that it wasn't important on what was happening on the indictments, right?
Exactly, Mr. Edwards.
Yeah.
With that said,
I'm just trying to get a feel. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right,
so,
Don Patek, we're getting ready to take it on. Oh, I see calls coming in on our,
well, we'd like to thank everybody
on our
for
phones
listening.
And et cetera, but now we're not off the air yet. But go ahead, Don.
Yeah, we'd like to thank everybody for listening. We'll be back at the same time. Typically scheduled is Kim Collins from MnDOT. Have a conversation about MnDOT's numbers and what they're doing and what's going on.
We
have James Brown pick us out.
Take us home, baby. Take us home.